Hello and welcome to the DL Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Digital.
I'm Mender's Logic.
I'm Flopsy, and this is the podcast by PC Gamers for PC Gamers.
Hey everyone, we're here with a special interview. Tyler Wild, executive editor of PC Gamer. Tyler, thanks for being here, man.
Hey, Tyler.
Yeah, no problem, of course.
Yeah, we're all really big fans of PC Gamer, yes. The podcast, YouTube channel, magazine, everything. Yeah. So why don't we start with a little history about you. How'd you get into this line of work, and how'd you end up at PC Gamer?
Well, I started when, it was 2006. I was still in college studying illustration, actually, oddly, maybe. And I was working at Jamba Juice, the smoothie chain.
Jamba Juice.
Oh, yeah, which was miserable. And I hated it, and I came home smelling like orange juice every day.
I'm sure you were really healthy, though.
Yeah.
No, I mean, they're not that healthy, actually. To be honest, they put, like, sherbet in all of those smoothies.
Yeah.
There goes our Jamba Juice sponsor. Thanks, yeah. Man.
Sorry. And then I responded to a Craigslist ad for an internship at GamesRadar, which is another Future's website, owning PC Gamer. And I got that, and it was really just data entry for sort of it was called Cheat Planet, was the offshoot of GamesRadar that was full of cheat codes and stuff. They bought that site. And that was back when actually you got a lot of traffic from having a big database of cheat codes.
Yeah, which, I remember that, yeah.
Which has changed over time, actually. People don't... The word cheats has completely taken a dive as far as something people look up.
What do you attribute
that to? Well, it's just not a word used as much, I guess. I mean, the idea of cheat codes is really different now.
Maybe the rise of the multiplayer games, you know?
I mean, there's multiplayer games, and there's all kinds of, like, integrated stuff. The idea of actually entering, like, the Konami code anymore... You don't really think about it when you get a game. What are the cheat codes, you know?
Yeah.
It's just not a thing that happens. No, people look for walkthroughs still, of course. They have game facts and all that.
Yeah. Because you're only cheapening your own experience, I think. You know, if you're playing a single-player game, you know, you're getting less of the content if you're just zooming by it or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, not that I didn't put in all kinds of codes for GTA 3 and, you know, turned on low gravity and then... made sure all the cops were flying through the air.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, they're fun.
So I did that, and then, you know, it just so happened that they were sort of expanding. GamesRadar had just relaunched in 2006. Before that, there had been Daily Radar, which closed down, so that's not a site that exists anymore. So I was hired at GamesRadar that same year after the summer while I was an intern. You know, sort of doing my dues over the summer unpaid, entering cheat codes, and I kept doing the same thing for a long time. But it really sort of happened when I had never written professionally at all, and Eric, who was running GamesRadar at the time, I remember he held up a copy of Super Dragon Ball Z, and he said, you know, nobody wants to review this, so who's going to review this game? And I raised my hand as a lowly intern. And I said, I'll do it. And he's like, have you ever written before? And I go, yeah. Even though I never had, really, not professionally. So so he gave it to me, and I spent the whole weekend just sleeping away over this review.
To Dragon Ball Z.
To Super Dragon Ball Z for the PlayStation 2, yeah. And I was reading all kinds of reviews, other people's reviews, to try to see how they write about stuff, and... You know, eventually just turned something in. And I think Michael Raparez, who I ended up working with for a long time, was the first one to read it. And I remember what he said. He said, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
After you slaved all weekend, too.
Have you read that recently? Have you taken a look at it?
I don't know if it's still online. I'm afraid to say if it is.
I'm going to check it out. I'm going to find out.
Yeah, it's... Awesome. Man, I'm sure it's terrible.
Somebody should review reviews.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. That'd be funny.
Well, you probably have what most gamers probably consider a dream job. Do you have any advice for people who want to get into PC gaming journalism? Do you just have to do the work and hope someone notices?
Yeah, essentially, I mean, the way to do it and get paid to do it, I guess, is to is to freelance at least at first or start your own site. But, you know, if you get good work out there, honestly, like, if you're trying to get work on a site like PC Gamer or IGN or GameSpot or whatever it might be, you just have to have good work out there. Editors are just looking for someone they can trust to do something quickly, if, you know, be it a review or a feature or whatever it is, to do something quickly and write it really well. Something they're not, an editor wants to work as little as possible because we're lazy bastards. So we just want good, clean copy and as soon as possible. So if you have great samples, if you've written great stuff, we want to see that. But the first thing you have to do, obviously, is to start writing things and putting them somewhere. If that's on your own personal blog that you just sort of promote through Twitter, you know, then that's fine. You know, nothing against that. No one really cares where you've been published if they can read really good work from you. Mm-hmm. I think you'd be surprised at how quickly people start responding to you. Except for me, because I take forever to respond to email. I'll take years.
So you could do all that, or you could just answer something on Craigslist, huh?
Yeah, I gotta say, there's some amount of luck. I mean,
yeah, I'm sure.
To work full time as an editor, for example, it, you know, A, it helps to live in the San Francisco Bay Area. If you don't, that's not necessarily a deal breaker. There's lots of sites like Polygon where people work. You know, they have a distributed sort of workforce all over the place.
And you also got in pretty early as far as media of gaming, right?
Yeah, 2006 was, well, it was an okay time to get in. Not early, but I think things were changing in 2006 as far as shifting fully toward the web. My company was still pretty heavily a magazine company. I mean, and PC Gamer still is a magazine. But, you know, since then we've definitely turned our focus, you know, 2006 to 2014, you know, so far over to the web.
Where, yeah, so earlier Bobby said, you know, you got the dream job. Is it really as good as it sounds? I mean, and every job is still a job, right? You go there and you're like, oh man, I got to do that again today. But does it ever strike you as like, oh man, this is awesome, you know, like every once in a while?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be going on a trip or something to do something. I went to Iceland to cover EVE FanFest. And flying into Iceland, looking at that crazy island.
That's awesome.
Of course, I'm thinking like, yeah, this is incredible. And, you know, stuff like that, moments like that. There, I've had so many great experiences and just working with great people. But it is a job, yeah. I go in. A lot of it's about communication. You know, I get in 9:30, and we have sort of a chat program, and we're talking with our UK team, who there's an 8-hour time difference, so they're just getting ready to leave. So we're going back and forth, oh, who's going to review this, and if I decide someone's going to review this, now I have to assign it to the freelancer and do the paperwork and make sure they get paid and do the editing. You know, it's, you know, my family likes to say I just play video games for a living.
Right.
Yeah.
a whole lot more of it is just trying to keep up on such a fast-moving industry. You know, there's a lot of reading involved, to be honest, and a lot of sort of vetting games, trying to figure out. I tend to, I'm mostly in charge of reviews, so I spent a lot of time just trying to figure out what we should review, because there are so many PC games released.
So many.
Every single day on Steam.
Yeah.
Now they've really opened the gates. Like, there's just hundreds of games a week, and I'm going, you know.
Yeah, that's what the gamers are feeling, too.
Sometimes we think about changing the name of the podcast to the Steam Podcast, because we talk about it so much, especially during the summer sale. It's like so much to put out. Speaking about reviews, I got a couple questions about reviews.
Sure.
I'm sorry, one second.
I had a question real quick. You said that when you were talking about they just want somebody that can do good work and do it quickly. How long do people, how long do reviewers get to review a game? How many hours do they actually usually put in? And then how long does it take for them to write it?
That's a good question. It's it varies depending on the game. We just got our Divinity Original Sin review up.
Yeah, we're excited. Quite a while.
Yeah, quite a while after release, but that's because it's like a 100-hour game.
Yeah.
And, you know, our reviewer, who's one of our editors in the UK, just felt he needed a lot of time.
I'm sure.
Usually when I assign like your average game to a freelance reviewer, it'll be a week, and I'll usually include a weekend. And that's if I can, if it's a rush sort of thing where I'm like, I'm assigning this late. We need to get this up on Friday. Now it's Monday. Do you have time to do this? You know, I'll ask.
Gotcha.
If they do have time. But I would never say, hey, review Divinity, and now it's Sunday. I need it on Tuesday, because that would kill someone trying to play. Because we do like to have our reviewers finish a game, or if it's not like a linear game which you can finish, at least play till they feel comfortable they've sort of had as complete an experience as someone who bought it would expect to have.
Yeah. Is that because you, on some games, do you get them early so that you could have them, on release day? Okay.
Yeah.
That must be awesome.
So that's a whole complex thing that I spent a lot of my time chasing down. That's another fun part of the job is contacting, whoever it might be, EA, Konami, and asking for a review code.
So they make you reach out, and it doesn't work the other way? I had always thought that they reach out to you guys and say,
It depends. Lots of times I'll get an email saying, hey, here's a code for, whatever game. But, if I don't email Ubisoft or something and ask, hey, can we have Watch Dogs code? We want to do a review. Sometimes you'll just kind of get that they're dealing with a lot of websites and magazines.
Oh, I'm sure.
So speaking with your relationship with the studios, a movie reviewer can go their entire career without running into one of the actors or directors that they're criticizing.
True.
And you have to criticize somebody and then potentially hope that they'll invite you to their studio to go look at, 2 months later, and you might have just shat all over their game, So how do you deal with that?
It's never come up a whole lot. I remember giving a very negative review to Bomberman Act Zero for Games Radar.
That's my favorite game, dude.
Which was a terrible game. Horrible game. They tried to make Bomberman all cyberpunk and dark.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. It was really terrible. And I remember, I think someone who did PR or something just kind of elbowed me in the rib and was like, thanks for that one time when we met. But then we were all friendly. Everyone's actually, in my experience at least, I've heard stories about reviewers sort of getting into little sort of pissing matches with with the people they criticize. But in my experience, everyone in the industry has been totally gracious at accepting criticism. And hey, either they kind of know, when you write a review and you're critical, they kind of know, those were valid points. And we never really talk about it. Or maybe they think I'm an asshole, but they're just nice to me anyway.
Right.
That's funny. Yeah. So
I'm always, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying I think Telltale is really funny because I've been reviewing all of the Wolf Among Us episodes.
Good games.
Except for episode 2 I didn't review. Someone else did that one. But I just posted my review. Every single time I post one, they retweet it or respond or something on Twitter. And usually they're very positive, so that's understandable because I think it's a great series. But
yes, it is.
I think my review of the whole season was fairly critical. But even though it still got a pretty high score, 83, I'm still critical of some parts of it. But like Clockwork, they favorited it, and on Twitter, and I just don't think there's any ever hard feelings there. Mm. They understand that.
That's a really good score.
Yeah, 83 is...
83 is high. But, I was pretty critical. I think it pulled through because the story and the writing is so...
Yeah.
Is so much fun.
Speaking of meeting people in the industry, was there ever any time when you got a little starstruck or speechless meeting anybody? And who was that with?
Tim Schafer, for sure.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, meeting Tim Schafer. I remember one time I met Tim Schafer. This is after I'd met him a couple times before, interviewed him, I think. And he came by the office, and I shook his hand and said hi. And then later, I was walking over to the elevators to go outside, and he was standing with some people by the elevators. And I was coming up, actually, to talk to a coworker about something. And he thinks I'm walking up to him, and he turns and shakes my hand again, thinking that I'm just going to I'm just a fan coming to shake his hand again. And I was embarrassed because he didn't even remember shaking my hand 10 minutes ago.
Awkward.
That's funny.
But I'm sure he's used to it because that was cool. And I've met all kinds of people. When I was much younger, I met Peter Molyneux.
Oh, nice.
I enjoyed that. He was he's a very charismatic guy. Yeah, he's a character, but he's I think it was for a Fable 2 meeting at E3 one year, and he totally got me on his side. Like, he's so charismatic. I didn't really care for Fable 2 when I played it.
Yeah. But, that's cool. That's like Cliffy. Cool. Cliffy's pretty charismatic, too.
Yeah, I met Cliff once in the bathroom of a bar.
Always there.
At an E3 party.
Is there some kind of disclaimer I should put out before?
Yeah. No, I remember I made this joke on, we're doing like a show, the PC Gamer show, and I made this joke in the first episode we did that I remember I was in the bathroom of this bar at E3, and the hand dryer was exceptionally loud. When you hit the button, it would just be, it was like an airplane taking off. And we were kind of playing with it. My friends and I were drunk. We're laughing at it. And he bursts out of a stall and runs up to the hair dryer and starts yelling right into the air that's coming out, going, and then walks out of the room.
That's awesome.
So that was my first experience with Cliffy B.
That's funny. Nice. That's cool.
So you guys seem to have jumped over to the digital, you know, going from the, I know you still have the magazine and all, but a lot of magazines went, you know, they just disappeared, and you guys almost seamlessly made the jump to digital. Do you think that has to do because a lot of, with your customer base, you know, being more of the, you know, savvy with electronics and stuff, or was there some secret magic you guys did behind the scenes to make sure that happened?
No secret magic, I think. You know, that was set in motion before I started at PC Gamer. They had a website. They managed to get a website before some of the other magazines. I think what helps the most probably is that PC Gamer is a completely independent magazine. No one owns PC Gaming. We're called PC Gamer, and there's no, we don't have to pay anyone for that license. It's not like official Xbox magazine.
Gotcha.
Which they do have a website too, and that's and they're doing great. And of course, love our other publications. But you know, we sort of have the benefit of not having to deal with Microsoft at all.
Yeah,
you guys really are. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no. Well, we had a website fairly early, and we also have a brand that's been around since 1993 in the UK, I think. 94 in the US.
94.
So, as far as, we were able to start a website that attracted a lot of people very quickly, just you know, on the name brand.
Yeah, you guys really are the gold standard of like reviewing and PC Gamer. I mean, you're called PC Gamer for God's sake, you know?
Yeah.
Has Metacritic and that whole thing just changed? Has it changed anything about your reviewing process? Do you even think about that? How it just, you know, it's kind of taken over as far as, I still check your guys' score, but I check Metacritic as well.
Yeah, you know, we think about it. We definitely don't tailor our scores for Metacritic, you know, given that they do their own sort of weighting system and all that. You know, we don't try to let it influence us that it's there. I wish it were less important to the I would rather people read reviews than just go off of an average score. I mean, it's not to say Metacritic can't tell you anything. Definitely when you take the average, you can get a sense of, hey, did people hate this game or this movie? Did people love it? Or was it pretty good? Is it okay? You know, you can get a pretty good sense. Mm-hmm. But I think they use it a little too heavily in the industry. I mean, I remember reading stories about how developers will decide people's bonuses based on Metacritic scores and stuff. That's a little bit harsh. I mean, hey, if the game sells, then
it's true.
Good job, you. Forget the critics, but you know, I mean, we just have to keep doing what we do and trying to just be honest as a gamer talking to consumers. You know,
Cool.
Do I like this game? Would I buy it? And however Metacritic weights us, you know, is nothing we have control over.
Cool. You guys post a lot on Twitter and all, but for people that maybe don't follow you on Twitter, could you tell us a little bit about what sort of games you're playing right now? What sort of genres you like?
Yeah, well, I like all kinds of things. I just finished playing The Wolf Among Us, of course, which I would recommend, which I just reviewed. It's a lot of fun.
Last chapter just came out recently.
Yeah, the last episode of this season, at least, if they do another season, which I don't know. Mm-hmm. I got into it because I really like that Telltale style of gameplay, mm-hmm. Sort of adventure game, decision-making, dialogue. But I never really liked the Walking Dead. I don't know why I never liked the graphic novel. I never got into the show.
I'm the same way. Everybody
I just
makes
find
fun of me.
The whole zombie apocalypse and just like, look at you. You have to survive. I don't care. I'm so cynical.
I'm but right
the
there with
Among
you.
Us, I thought was great because it's crazy, you know. But aside from your sort of adventure games, I definitely, you know, played a lot of shooters growing up. I played a lot of Quake 2, mm-hmm. Quake 2 CTF. I failed some classes in school because of Quake 2 CTF.
That's funny.
Tyler, I never saw anybody get so good in Counter-Strike that over 5 minutes.
I know.
That was amazing, dude. Wow.
I actually like Counter-Strike a lot, but I'm not. Evan Lottie, our editor-in-chief in the U.S., has put in, like when he says, I think in the show he's put in 500 hours. I think he has, or more.
That's
he's
crazy.
Really good at Counter-Strike. I love competitive shooters, but I've never been the person to be the best at them. You know, I just enjoy playing them. I'm not at the top of the scoreboard.
Takes a lot of time.
Takes a lot of dedication.
A lot of time.
I love Tribes Ascend. Nice. I wish it had been supported longer. I don't really play it anymore. I love Rising Storm and Red Orchestra 2. I think those are fantastic competitive shooters. Just for their fidelity and for the asymmetry of them, where, you know, like in Rising Storm, at least it's American and Japanese World War II, and you can be an American flamethrower, and, you know, the Japanese don't have, the Japanese have like a knee mortar, which is really interesting. The Japanese only have bolt action rifles, the Americans have semi-auto rifles. I just love the authenticity that Tripwire puts into games. I think it's really cool. Or not Tripwire, sorry. That's not what I meant.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure either.
I thought it was Tripwire.
Oh, it is Tripwire.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was Tripwire.
That
yeah.
is what I meant, yes. No, yeah. Tripwire is so into the authenticity of their weapons that that's exciting for me. But
Do you feel like, as a reviewer of games, that your interest has expanded, or have you gotten more cynical of games the more you play?
I think there was a time where I felt like I was getting cynical, but I don't think I was.
Hmm.
I think I've definitely expanded just from, you know, broadening horizons to review different kinds of things.
Yeah.
That's probably the best part of starting this podcast. Like, I'm playing way more games than I was before, different kinds, trying other things. Maybe
just
you can
help
me
them, right?
With a problem that I'm running into. It's sure. like, you know, you have your games that you love so much, but you don't have time to play those anymore because you got to play all these other things so that you can talk about them. How do you find the balance? I'm sure, like everybody, you get obsessed with something and then stick with it. You know, I have my two favorite games, but I got to stay away from them. How do you do the balancing act?
You don't have a life.
Yeah, exactly, right?
I don't know. I got obsessed with Starbound for a while.
Played
that for for a couple months. Just that's all I played. But
nice.
Yeah, I've definitely had to learn to sort of like back off. Like I said, Evan plays Counter-Strike every damn night, so it doesn't really bother him. And he loves Arma too, which one day he'll get me into.
Didn't Arma 3 come out?
Yeah, no, he's playing Arma 3.
Okay.
But, you know, it's tough. I just try to experience new things. I try to shut down whatever game I'm playing now and then and try something else.
That's what I told you to do, man.
Cool. Just a couple more questions and we'll wrap this up.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
So I've been seeing, you know, there was a MOBA trend that came out a couple years ago. More recently, there's a crafting survival kind of theme that's been going on that's kind of hit right now. What do you see as the next big kind of genre or theme that happens in gaming?
That's tough. Yeah. The crafting survival thing is definitely like the forest out on early access. People are talking
about Stomping Land.
Like I said, I was addicted to Starbound for a long time. Yeah. And people are still making MOBA style games. Maybe too many.
Yeah.
It looks like there's a lot of arena shooters all got planned. You know, they're not out yet, but
you know, making a new Unreal tournament. And Cliff Bleszinski's announced he's making his own new arena game, which is interesting. I don't think that's a great space to get into, to be honest. I don't think I think Unreal's doing it the right way, or Epic is, by doing this completely free sort of community designed arena shooter. I think if they spent 3 or 4 years in secret designing an arena shooter, they would end up probably failing.
Yeah.
I don't think it would sell. So that doing it free and using it to promote Unreal Engine, I think, was the best choice they could have made. But I think we'll see. I think we'll see Oculus Rift come out. Mm. I think we'll see VR games of a new style and new genre appear. Because with what I've played with the Oculus Rift, it's really interesting just to be in a setting, you know, a place, kind of walking around, looking at things. So I think we'll see, you know, maybe more sort of like Gone Home style exploration games for the Oculus Rift, where you're just sort of in a place, you know, like you're on Star Trek The Next Generation and you're just loading up a Sherlock Holmes simulation, and it's more about sort of interacting with the environment, dialogue.
Yeah, just that engineering room in on the Oculus was amazing. The sense of being there was, and it's just one little tiny room, but it really made me feel like I was there. Have you messed around with the DK2?
I have. I don't have one, but I played it at the Game Developers Conference here in San Francisco a while back. And
is it night and day?
Yeah, it's a huge step up. Huge step up, where the resolution makes it so you can read text much easier and just looks much better. And then they have a camera now with the DK2, so that not only does it track head rotation, it also tracks movement in space, you know, relative to where your head starts. So if you kind of like, if you almost strafe with your body, it'll track that, which definitely helps me at least feel a little less queasy, that I can lean forward and it tracks that. So rather than just looking up and down, left and right, you know, you can move your whole torso around and it tracks that, which is really cool.
That is cool. That is cool.
Awesome. Yeah, we've recently had a chance to play around with the first development kit, and it's been pretty good, but I hear the second one is just such a big improvement.
And they say the production version will be even better than the second development kit. So here's hoping that's out soon.
Yeah, seriously.
They definitely have the money now, that's for sure.
Yeah, they have a lot of money now.
We're going to do the Inside the Actor Studio now. These are three questions we ask all our interviews. You ready?
Okay. Yeah.
What is your favorite game of all time, sir?
Tough one.
He wasn't ready.
No, he wasn't
ready.
I said I was ready, but I wasn't ready. That's so hard.
We can come back to it.
I know. I'm gonna go with Quake 2.
Quake 2. Okay.
Nice.
I was thinking Red Alert maybe, because I played a lot of Red Alert.
Okay.
But I think I played more Quake 2 when it comes down to it.
Going with the
classic. I kind of feel that what Cliffy B is going to make is might be, you know, something a little more twitchy, like old school, like that.
It could be.
Yeah.
Probably.
And if a game character played you in a movie, who would it be?
If a game character played me in a movie, jeez. Conker, or the Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Nice. I like it. Nice. I like it.
Not a very PC gamer answer of me.
No, that's good.
It's good, man.
N64 rare.
Yep, I like it.
I would have won with Sonic or something, so whatever. what game do you want to be made that hasn't been made?
I'll give you an example. I really wish that Marvel MOBA had been made. I really wanted to play
that. Yeah, that would have been nice.
Yeah.
Or a sequel, maybe, or something.
I'm going to think about it. I'm going to think hard. What game? There are so many games I wish had been made. I wish Star Citizen would ever be being made.
You can. That's a valid answer.
Yeah,
it's being made. It's being made. It doesn't count. Everyone wants Half-Life 3.
Okay.
I actually kind of hope Valve does something new, to be honest, even though I know Half-Life 3 has to happen, but I'm like, hey, it's been long enough. Make something new. But
why would they make games, though, when they're just printing money on Steam?
Valve seems true. Like they're so busy being Valve right now.
Yeah,
yeah, they really don't need to even... why make video games?
Well, I don't know if we need a Half-Life 3.
What are they? Yeah, it's Half-Life 3.
Yeah.
Beyond Good and Evil 2, I guess.
Okay.
Say that.
That's quality.
Nice.
Yeah. I like it.
That's kind of an obvious answer, but...
I like it.
Oh, it looks so good in those images they showed a long time ago. I never saw.
Yeah, that never saw again.
Sometimes those classics that people want to see come back doesn't always work out. I mean, we all remember Duke Nukem, which I like.
Yeah.
I still stand up.
Well, exactly. That's my worry with Half-Life 3. Like, we all know Valve is going to make Half-Life 3, or they are.
Mm-hmm.
But after all this time,
and
when you go back and play Half-Life 2 and play the episodes, is it good? Yes. Is it as good as we've all built it up to be over the last, 6 years? No. Like, it's a great game, but we've made it out to be this legendary game where, I mean, sure, it's one of the best games, but Half-Life 3 is not going to be the instant, incredible legend I think that we expect it to be. So Valve has all this pressure to just deliver the greatest game of all time, Half-Life 3.
I mean, they did it twice. Can they do it a third time? I wouldn't even make it. I just
keep dropping hints. It's going to be a really good game, but it won't live up. It can't possibly live up to all the expectations,
They could poop in a box and sell 10 million if it had Half-Life 3 on the cover.
Yeah, that's true. What I really want them to do is, like, E3 next year is just release Half-Life 3 on Steam.
No notice.
For $10, like, the day before E3 starts. And everyone will fly home to play it and forget about it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
No one will cover E3.
Crash the internet.
Nice. Pretty much, yeah. I think that would be great.
That would be.
Nice. Well, that's I guess that's our three questions, and that brings us about to the end here. So, if people want to get want to follow you on Twitter, you're on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your handle on Twitter?
Tyler_Wild. _ is my middle name.
With an E.
With an E at the end.
WILDE, like Oscar Wilde.
Cool. Yeah. Gotcha.
Right. Like Olivia Wilde.
Oh, nice.
I tell everyone she's my cousin.
Second cousin,
I'd go,
right?
I'd go with wife. Personally.
Yeah, if only. But, I've never met Olivia.
Well, then, of course, they can also check out PCGamer.com. You guys got a lot up there. You got a YouTube channel. You guys still have a magazine. Yeah. So, awesome. Dude, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tyler.
No problem.
Oh, thank you, please don't let Corey still keep winning at all the games on every episode of your show.
I know, he's won into it. First of all, I'm better than him at Hearthstone. He should not have won that. I got a bad deal. My deck was going to crush him. I played him at lunch a few times, and I won every time. Damn it.
What deck are you playing, by the way?
I'm playing this crappy rogue deck that is, like, I wanted to make a miracle rogue deck, but I didn't actually have all the cards.
I'm right there with you. I'm missing a bunch.
It's a miracle-less rogue deck.
So there's no miracle to it, but my only trick really is to use Questing Adventure and then stealth my Questing Adventure and then just play as many cards as I can till I have, like, till she has like 20 attack and then kill him in a hit. But That's what I'm using now. Sometimes I use a hunter deck, but it's not a good one. I don't even have all the basic hunter cards. I just focused on rogue purely and tried to unlock as many rogue cards as I could, but that might have been a mistake. I don't know. Yeah. I should diversify, really.
I'm playing a druid right now and having a lot of fun, but man,
druid's good.
It's really balanced right now, I think. Like, everything's got some decent decks.
I don't know. Druid, I get destroyed by druid decks, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I disagree. It's unbalanced. It's unfair. Druid OP.
Well, I'm playing a crappy druid deck, so you probably wouldn't lose to me.
Chad got down to rank 10. I was pretty proud of him.
Yeah.
Wow. I never got to rank 10. I've gotten to like rank maybe 14, but never 10. Yeah. Well, it's the PC gamer way to whenever you get beat by something to call it OP.
That's true.
Get in the forums and go, "This is bullshit. This is OP."
Agreed.
That's what we do.
Agreed.
Cool, Tyler. So I will send you a link tomorrow with the final product so you can check it out.
Awesome. Maybe, thank you, guys. Tweet it out. Good luck with your podcast. Good luck with everything you're doing.
Thank you, too.
I'm excited to hear it. Hear the rest of it, at least. I won't listen to my part because I hate hearing myself on audio.
That was a tough thing to get over at the beginning, man.
Me too.
I know, when you have to edit your own podcast and you're like, oh, is that how I sound?
Bobby loves it. He loves editing himself.
Wait, who said I loved it?
Yeah.
I actually had to tell Chad, we're going to kick you off the podcast unless you start listening to the podcast.
I can't stand my voice. I don't know how people like it.
You got to do it, though. It's necessary.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you very much, Tyler. I appreciate it.
That was awesome, man. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
From now on, we can always say when Path of Exile came out, that's when we started the podcast, right?
It was, yeah. Let's take our listeners back to how this all began.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really explained it since episode one.
It was about a year, wasn't it?
Is it about a year?
No, it can't be a year.
Somebody asked me today, and I said 6 months, but I was a guess.
Well, since we actually started doing it, it was a little ways later. But when we actually were like, we should totally do
concept.
This. Yeah, like when we came up with the idea and... Actually, we're serious about making it happen. I think that was October. No, it had to have been after October. It was November.
You know what? Fuck you, man. You remember exactly what game came out on what day, the exact day at what hour it came out. But things in our life, I want him to remember shit from my life, too, because I don't know.
Hey, I'm narrowing it down. I actually think I remember now because we were playing poker one night, and I was playing Crysis 2, and then I was talking a lot about Battlefield 4, so it was after Battlefield 4 came out. Then a couple weeks after that poker night, that's when we all went out for sushi, and that's, I think, when we first suggested it. We put the idea out
there. I didn't think so. I think we were on Skype, and we were playing a game, or we had just finished a game, and we got into this long discussion about some game theory or something like that. And then I said, hey, man, we should do a podcast. I kind of threw it out. I meant it, but I threw it out as a joke because I don't know if you're going to laugh at me, right? So that's how that started. And then here we are. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Here we are. Well, and then it was you and I at the beginning, and then Chad jumped on and then completed the...
for the craft synthesis.
Chad first was like... Yeah, I want to be on the podcast. And then I was like, well, you can be a producer. You can't talk, though. So, like, the very first episode he's on, he's typing and looking shit up while we talk and, like, doing a lot of pointing and shit that we didn't know what it meant. And then after a while, I was just like, well, it's not like we have an office and he's far away. He's, like, not in the booth, right? Yeah. He's sitting right next to me doing these things. So he just opened his mouth one day, and then there we go.
Yeah, some of those first episodes were pretty rough. I wouldn't recommend going back and listening to them.
No.
I think our very first two, we didn't even... I have them, but we never even aired them. That's when we actually recorded it on Skype, and we didn't even do it in person. Yeah.
All I want to know is that that Smite episode never came out, right? Where I was trying to do all the voices. That never came out, right?
That's it went up and then it went down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I made him pull it down. Jesus Christ.
I may still have it somewhere, you know.
You know it's bad if you want to pull
it
down.
So bad. I was drunk and trying to do all the voices. Because we went down the list and tried to give our opinions on every god in Smite. You know, and it was fucking...
And at this point in Smite, there were a lot of gods.
There was always about 40.
We're going through each one, and it went on forever. And, like, the further we go, the more drunk Emilio's getting, and it's just getting sloppy and sloppier.
I was even trying at the end. I was like, on her, rawr. Like, not even close.
Oh, wow. God.
Yeah.
Oh my. Well, I should probably mention that our Steam group's really taken off. We got quite a few members now, which is awesome. I posted something recently in the Steam group, a list of gaming documentaries. Most of them I've seen. A few of them I'm probably going to be watching in the next week here. I would recommend checking those out. And also, I put it in the discussions forum, which if anyone's got anything that they want to discuss in there, you know, just make a new discussion. I feel like we use the comment section a lot, which totally works, but that'll eventually get lost, especially if someone...
You'll miss something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of times we'll bring up a topic, like someone will bring up like strategy games or something. You know, that'd be perfect for a discussion because then it's always pinned there. We can always go back to it, and anyone new that joins the group can go there, you know.
Chad, did you watch Free to Play?
I haven't. I was going to ask Bobby what if he was going to recommend one, what would you recommend?
A lot of them are a little dated. I think most of them are about 6 years old. But my favorite one, even though it is a little old, is Rise of the Video Game. It's a five-part series that Discovery Channel did, I think 2007. And it goes through like the very beginning of video games all the way up to about mid-2000s. You know, World of Warcraft.
That's really dated, though.
Yeah.
Like, it can't even come up to like what's going on now, which is maybe some... the biggest things that's ever happened.
Yeah,
these
but it's more about
crazy.
The history.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and there are some that specifically focus on professional gaming. One called Frag, which I haven't seen, and then, of course, Free to Play. And then, of course, Indie Game the Movie. Indie Game the Movie is probably the best one on their hands down.
I started watching that. It was late at night, so I crashed out, but I've never gotten back to it. But it was interesting, but I don't know. Some of these indie developers are a little like... I don't know, what's the word, pretentious, maybe like a little stuck up, a little jaded for being indies, like,
yeah.
It's definitely,
you know,
something
they
like,
are, they're the guys that didn't get into the big studios, honestly,
yeah,
for the most part.
But a lot of times it feels to me like an artist that throws paint on a wall and calls it art, and then was like, why can't you see my genius? You know, that sort of thing, like, some of these indie games are amazing, I'm not knocking indies at all. But some of them are a little high-handed on their perception of their own art.
I've always had an issue with people pushing their philosophies through their art.
Yeah.
Like, when I read a book, like, Michael Crichton did one on, like, global warming or something like that. Halfway through the book, I was like, oh, he's just preaching. I don't care what you're preaching. But it's just like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Like, do it in an article. Don't do it in your art.
Yeah.
You know? And you play games like, what's the one that is very Mario-esque and has time travel in it?
Braid.
You know, he was trying to say that. Yeah, he's trying to say a lot of things in his game.
Yeah.
It probably affected... I didn't enjoy the game, but I don't know if it had something to do with that. But if it did, it ruined a potentially good game.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I was going to bring up Braid right now, actually, about that. Mm-hmm. So, he has a quote in there from the... guy that created the atom bomb or whatever.
Oh, right.
At the end of the game, and it's like, come on, you're gonna compare your art to dropping the atom bomb? Like, let's be serious here.
Yeah.
But anyways,
not to say that game isn't art. I just don't like philosophy in art, I guess. Anyway, wow, we got deep for a second.
Yeah, we did.
Let's talk about Shovel Knight.
Yeah,
where a knight has a shovel. We're grown men. We get serious around here.
Should we jump right into it?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm actually interested to hear about this. This was a pretty popular indie game, right?
Yeah, I was excited to play it. I had heard good things. I'd heard a couple people I knew say it was like amazing. I had to pick it up. It's $14.99, which is right there, like almost too much.
Almost too much. Yeah.
And so I wasn't sure, but I knew I wasn't going to go on sale anytime soon. So I picked it up. Had a little extra cash, so I picked it up. It will stick to the 80s feel regardless of, you know, it almost sacrifices gameplay to make sure it stays in that 80s feel.
That's what you don't want. What you want, potentially, is you want the 80s feel with all the modern bells and whistles.
And there are some. Like, they do some cool things. I like how many hidden areas there are. There's a bunch of different music tracks that you can find and change your music up around. The art style, while it's an 8-bit format, is definitely... it pushes more colors and more animations and stuff than you would see in an 80s game. But I felt like the control scheme was... he feels sluggish because he feels like that 80s... there's no, like, dash or sprint or... he just felt
holding
a little
B
slow.
Doesn't do it.
Yeah.
I was watching you play, and you were holding B. And it was, I found it was interesting because you were probably wanting him to walk faster.
Yeah, right? I was really trying to get him to move faster, and he just wouldn't.
Yeah.
I felt like the down attack, like you jump up and you hold down and he does like his shovel.
It's his bread and butter.
Yeah, it felt like overpowered compared to his little shovel. Mm. His normal attack didn't have any range, but his like downward attack, he was basically invincible.
It's like a pogo stick.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Exactly. I liked the game. I thought it was good. If you're really into that 80s nostalgia, it's really cool. It has this cool concept with checkpoints. So it's got checkpoints through the level. I saw 5 or 6 at the top end of one of the levels. You can use them as checkpoints, and if you die, you go back to them. But you could also destroy them for gold, and it'll drop a bunch of gold, but then your checkpoint's gone. So if you're good at the game and you want to do like a gold run, you can destroy those checkpoints as you reach them, and you'll get a lot of gold in that run, but you won't have any checkpoints.
It's almost
if
like
you, die.
You can make it a roguelike if you like.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
like,
pretty cool.
It's kind of how you want to, however you want to play.
Yeah.
Can you do with the gold?
So you can go into the towns and you can buy different things, and they've got a bunch of special items that you can utilize by pushing up in the attack, and then you can change those kind of on the fly. So one of the things that was I also thought was cool was they have a
That's a Castlevania mechanic, I want to say.
Yeah.
Up and attack was, your special blue one.
Yeah, it is. They have a fishing rod that is one of your abilities. And if there's a hole in the ground, you know, kind of like a Mario hole, some of them have sparkles in there. If you drop your fishing pole down there, you can pull up special items and stuff from the ground. I thought that was a cool, like...
Chad has loved fishing in every fucking game I've ever played with.
If it's got fishing, I'll do it, pretty much. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. The difficulty kind of ramps up and down. It's kind of spikes.
Mm.
So there was sometimes like some areas are really hard. Sometimes it's like overly easy. Checkpoints are really close together sometimes and really far apart other times. So it had some issues kind of with pacing a little bit. But overall, I was enjoying
the game. Do you see what all the fuss is about?
Not
or is it
really.
The name? I see some things like people gravitate towards a name like Goat Simulator, Shovel Knight, that guy who did the potato salad on Kickstarter. Did you hear about this?
It kind of catches on like a meme.
Right.
And I think Shovel Knight did have that.
Caught a little bit of that wave, right?
Yeah.
It's got that retro feel that's kind of popular right now.
Right.
And it's hitting right in the vein of that, like, that retro 80s nostalgia that Bobby seems to cling to, you know, like it's just like.
Well, I don't know if this is exactly what I'm into. I mean, this is really inspired by NES games,
exactly.
With 8-bit graphics and chip tunes, but I consider that more of an early 90s kind of thing.
Really?
But,
what about new players? What are we thinking about the 15-year-old that picks up Shovel Knight? Is he going to enjoy this? Is he going to be like, what the fuck is this? Like,
I don't think, if you never went through the NES era, the NES era, you wouldn't understand why people would be interested in this.
Yeah.
Because it definitely harkens back to, like, playing on your Nintendo.
But see,
even from the pause menu comes up, and it's that same screen that you saw in every other game back in the 80s. I was fortunate enough to be able to use a controller for this. I was trying at first to use a keyboard, but I didn't even want to deal with it, so I just went in and grabbed your controller.
Stole.
Borrowed your controller, and then it worked out. It worked out fine. And by the way, I installed that controller, no problems whatsoever.
Oh, yeah.
It's a wireless Xbox 360 controller. It's not
for PC.
For PC. Yeah. It's not an Xbox One controller. It's the Xbox 360 one.
Mm-hmm. And the batteries last super long time.
And there was you didn't have drivers, so I went online and pulled the drivers.
Yeah.
And everything worked out perfectly. No issues whatsoever. So
That's cool. The only reason we say go with that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They kind of have the corner on the market. That's honest. All I wanted to say about this, we'll try to end on this. Rogue Legacy, you know, you got that 8-bit feel, but you also have new mechanics, and you also have things that you couldn't do way back then. That's what you should be doing these days. Just like you said, I think that them trying to adhere so much to the old school hurt them a little bit. From what I was watching, nothing new, nothing impressive, nothing like, wow, you know? Just Just another game, another indie game.
Yeah.
But there's a similar game that I've played. I haven't played Shovel Knight, but just by looking at it and how you describe it, Volgar the Viking, I think it's called, sounds very similar. And I had the same problem with that, with the controls. They felt a little clunky, which back in the day, that's how they were. But I do like it when they take these old games and they reinvent them, kind of like the DuckTales game. It's modeled after the original, I think, a Sega Genesis game.
Yeah.
But they've redone it graphically, and they've redone the controls, and it's got a much better game feel to it. Same thing with Rogue Legacy. It just feels better. The controls feel way more responsive. I think that's better, because when we played those games when we were younger, we always wanted that. That's what we wished the games could be. So I think, yeah, I like it when they do take something old and then improve upon it in certain ways.
I agree with you guys on that. I'm not. I don't want people to think that I didn't enjoy the game. The game is fun. I was playing it. I was enjoying it. I felt like it was worth my money. I wasn't disappointed. If you're after that, craving after that nostalgia kind of feel, this definitely satisfies that. But if you're somebody that either wasn't around for the NES or could really care less about playing NES games, then don't pick this game up. It's going to disappoint you.
Chad, did you check out that link I sent you today?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay, so it's about Xenonauts, and it's a...
I didn't even know XCOM was called Xenonauts.
It's not.
Isn't that what
it is completely... Well, okay, let me explain.
Okay.
So, the original XCOM, which is your favorite game of all time, correct?
I want to preface that by saying it was my favorite game of all time, but that doesn't mean I want to play it.
No, for sure. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I think everybody understands that.
Okay.
So then XCOM Enemy Unknown came out, and it was to rave reviews. Mm-hmm. You know, me and Bobby really enjoyed it.
I'm still planning to play that.
So then Xenonauts comes out, and it is a spiritual successor to the original XCOM.
Oh, gotcha.
Hardcore, super hardcore, like real. So from what I've heard is its normal mode is harder than the almost impossible mode on XCOM. It's extremely hard.
Okay, gotcha.
But it is... it's isometric, you know, all the same things in that old school style, that 8-bit style, but it looks great. It's updated. Everything what I've just been said, that's why I'm going into this. It's an old school game brought to modern day things. They even use the old XCOM UI, but people that are playing it really like it. So I think that it's literally right up your alley. Like,
cool. And that's out right now?
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. I'll check it out for sure.
Cool. Well, today we got into EVE Online.
Before we get in, I just wanted to give a shout-out to some of our group members who actually brought this up. The reason we brought this up is because we had a couple... The reason I started playing this today, or this weekend, is because we had a couple group members that kept saying how good the EVE Online was. And, you know, I've been nervous because of the high ramp of learning, but they kept pushing this. So Liz Bell and Otto Dresden, they were the two guys that were talking about this. So I just want to give a shout out, but go ahead, Bobby.
From a humble bundle I bought, I had a free month of this, and I think some sort of Richter skin or something like that. So I'd been meaning to use that, and so Chad was getting into it today, and even though we both were playing, it really wasn't like we could co-op it at all. We kind of just played our own separate games and kind of talked about similar missions that we were doing. But yeah, it's pretty much what I expected. A very involved game, a lot better graphically than I had thought. It looks really good.
I walked into Chad's room for a second just to say, hey, I'll see you later. And I was like, what is this? Like, wow, that looks really good.
Yeah, it looked, which is crazy because this game came out in 2003, so they must have been upgrading the graphics on a continuous basis. But I didn't know they were upgrading it, so I was expecting a 2003 space game, and I got in this game.
What's amazing is they've never upgraded the engine. It's still the original architecture, and they just keep getting every inch they can out of there, which is a testament in itself. You know, that's really cool.
So it looks great. It has a really good tutorial. I was very impressed with that. And you need a tutorial for this.
Yes, you do.
For this game. The tutorial, I'm not even sure if I even got through it. It starts you off with maybe 20 different things to do. And once you make it through that, it sends you to maybe...
Career missions?
Career missions. And then those are tutorials in themselves. And you go through each one of those, and they kind of explain all the different things you can do in this universe. And it is
vast. Should we explain? what Eve is?
Sure. Go for it.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's an MMO. It's, what, $20 on Steam, and then you have to pay a monthly fee for it?
I'm doing a free 14-day trial. Mm-hmm. I didn't go through Steam. I got a free 14-day trial, and I believe I can just pick my monthly amount and go for it. So I don't know if it's $20 to buy or if it's free. I think I can just start paying monthly and then go into it. So I'm not sure what the $20 at Steam it gets you.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's some sort of starter pack. I don't think so, though. I think that's actually for the game itself. I don't know if once you're done with the tutorial, if you do choose to continue it, then you have to pay. You have to buy something called, what is it, Plex?
Plex, or Pilot there's also a GTC extension. Or ETC.
Welcome to the Q&A section with no A.
But before we get into this, so everybody knows what we're talking about. It's an MMO. It's a ship star based MMO. You have a character, but you basically are playing as ships. But your ships kind of help determine what your class would be, the equivalent of your class would be. But you can change your ships depending on what missions you're taking or what you're planning to do. So there's no class. It's not a class based MMO. You're pretty much free to do whatever you want, and your skills you can eventually level up everything if you want, although I was told it takes 15 years or something at this point in real time to get all the skills maxed out. And then the other thing I was told is, even if you have your skills maxed out, you can still lose to a newbie who's in the ship for the right occasion if you're on the ship for
which
the
is
wrong,
what you
wrong,
want in a combat occasion. MMO. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, it is straight PvP. There's no part of the game that is like town for a Warcraft for WoW or anything. There is no section that you are free that you will not get ganked in. However,
well, if you're docked, I think
if you're docked, protected. If your ship is not there to target, yes, you can't get targeted.
So, which equates to a town. If you're docked, that's a town.
Right? All you can do is pick up missions, and then you have to leave that town.
How do you do bartering?
Doing the stuff in the docking, I guess you could call that a town, but as soon as you undock, like, you could be in the super safe town area of yours, and you can still get attacked. Mm. They have, like, police, you know, like guards or whatever, right. That will kill the guy once
you're
he attacks.
Going up.
But if you're dead, you're dead.
Yeah.
You know? So it is a very harsh PvP environment, but because of that, you know, people form their coalitions and their alliances and everything like that to help protect themselves.
Is there only one server?
There is only one server. It's okay. Called...
doesn't matter. There's only one.
Tranquility.
Okay. And,
but then they also have a testbed server.
Okay.
So they really have two servers plus a Chinese server, I think, is a third server. But if you have friends that are playing this game and you join the game, you'll be in their server.
Okay. Go ahead. Bobby, you got anything?
You didn't like it, though. You were kind of over it. Halfway through.
No, it was just bad timing. I actually liked it a lot. I see why people spend so much time on this game. It had a lot of the things that I really enjoyed in World of Warcraft. I played a ton of World of Warcraft, like so much of that game. And I got into all different aspects of it. PvP, PvE, raiding, doing the market, crafting, professions. And a lot of the things that I really liked in World of Warcraft, this game had a lot of. Although, I've only played 8 hours of it. I haven't even scraped the surface of it.
Yeah.
Wait, was that today? You guys played 8 hours?
Yeah.
That's
I
awesome.
Played mm-hmm. all day today.
So you guys enjoyed it. There was enjoyable aspects.
I loved it.
Yeah. Did you ever see his ship?
I can't wait to get... I'm going to... As soon as we get off this, I'm going to get back and play some more.
Oh, welcome to the Eve... next episode, we have the Eve update. And we're going to have it every week from now on.
No, I'm not doing the Skyrim thing that you do. But, no, So, granted, I haven't gotten ganked yet. So, I'm sure my opinion of the game will change after my ship blows up a couple times. But it is exactly the kind of game that I've been kind of looking for an MMO right now.
Awesome. Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. There being only one server, I imagine there's the Rust effect. I know there's the Rust effect because it makes headlines in the PC gaming world when these rival factions go to war. So I kind of feel like if you don't join one of these factions right away, you're probably just mincemeat, right? Or maybe they've talked about it and leave them alone.
So the way it kind of works is they've got these things called high sec areas and low sec.
Oh, you got it all up. You got it all understood. You know exactly. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So each zone that you're in has a security rating, and it can go from a 1 or actually a 0.9. A 1 would be you can't attack anybody, but there aren't any of those. So 0.9 would be the highest, meaning that the police will kill you in the next 10 seconds. That's a 0.9. All the way to a 0.
Kill the perpetrator.
The perpetrator, yeah. Right. If you attack somebody...
So most perpetrators, they're not going to attack you.
Not in a 0.9.
Right, okay.
So that's high sec. And then high sec ends at 0.5. And then 0.4 to 0 are low sec, meaning you can do some shenanigans, but they will attack you pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So you better do something quick and get the hell out of there. And then at 0... there's no police at 0. And then you can go negative, and I don't even know what negative, but 0 or double 0, they call it, means basically you're free to PvP as you want.
Negative, you're dead as you log in.
I don't know what negative means, but apparently it goes all the way to negative 1, so I don't know what the negative numbers mean.
War, basically, you would imagine.
Yeah, maybe you're in an unfriendly territory.
Yeah.
So, yes, there are... You're not weak when you start in because you're in these high security areas. So I never got attacked in my 8 hours. I saw plenty of players. I never got attacked. But I never went into NullSec or any of these other ones. Right. So,
Bobby, what was your experience? I mean, what happened? What'd you make or what do you feel like you're going to gravitate towards?
Well, they give you a lot of options, a lot of directions to go in with this game. And I think people kind of fall into something, be it mining or exploring, or I'm assuming combat might be a bigger part of the game later on. I didn't have a chance to finish all the career paths, but I don't know. I was coming off of Battlefield 4 playing a ton of that. So going from that to this was just slamming on the brakes because it is a very slow-paced game. It reminded me a lot of Star Trek. You know, when I was young, I liked Star Wars because that was action and blaster pistols and lightsabers. And then Star Trek was just kind of slow and, you know, very procedural, you know, and locking on targets. And that's kind of what this is like, which I can appreciate.
Yeah, one of the things that... So I was scared when I first got in here because I don't necessarily fly spaceships very well. But you don't actually fly in this game. You set up waypoints or targets, or it's basically almost like you're a commander of a ship, and you're not doing the actual navigation. You're just telling them, "I want to attack this."
So wait, do you have a crew?
It never mentions a crew, so it might be just you. The combat is turning on your lasers or whatever you're shooting, deciding if you want to orbit, approach, retreat. There's no like WASD controls. You're not actually controlling. There's no flying of your actual ship.
Is combat... Mm-hmm. You guys did practice combat, right?
Yeah.
Is it turn-based?
Against computers,
No turn-based. Yeah, real time.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So, I kind of feel like this is FTL, if FTL was in real time and like...
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. There is nothing that I can compare to this game to.
Yeah.
Wow.
When I heard that it wasn't... You're not controlling your ships, then I was scared that you weren't doing anything. Right. And it's not like that either. Because most of the combats, there's multiple ships going on. Which ship do you target? There's three different layers to your ship. There's shields, there's armor, and then there's your hull. So you're trying to get through all three of those. And there's all these different effects that can go on to affect those things.
Is it like Star Trek where you can move your shield power to a certain area?
No. You just have a shield thing.
Total shield.
But it all comes down to your like capacitor, which is your energy. So you can do things like a shield regenerator or a hull repair, but it takes your capacitor. And if you run out of capacitor, then things start to shut down. Mm. So it's more like trying to balance all those out.
I feel like you learned a lot today
about
the game. And you say you love it, but I don't see... What have you done that was fun?
So I just started out... So, okay, the other thing I wanted to mention is because there's no leveling up, there's no XP... You know, your skills are going in real time. So if I say I want to train this and it says it takes 3 hours to train, it just will do it whether I'm playing or not playing. So the way that you kind of level up in this game, although it's not leveling up, is through your money, because money will buy you ships and then your ships and other things, and that will actually upgrade you. Okay. You know what I mean? So it all comes down to like how you operate your money.
Like real life.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Like real life. And so after this 8 hours, I have, I think, 8 different ships and 5 million of their ISK, which is their gold.
In-game quarter.
Yeah, their currency. I've heard you can do like up to 60 million an hour up at the top level, but I felt like as a starting player, 5 million, that was...
You're doing pretty good, yeah.
I can pretty much buy what
it
I want.
It sounds great.
Yeah, and eight ships, I can do what I kind of want.
Tell the next
do.
Girl you met, I made 5 million.
So that's kind of why I was having fun, is because I felt like there was progress, and I was learning things, and I was doing things.
And Bob, like, it was last night when I was talking to you while you were playing Battlefield 4. Like, I'm trying to have an honest conversation about the podcast or whatever with him. This motherfucker keeps giggling out of nowhere.
Like, Bobby giggling?
He's like, oh, jeez. Oh, this guy, he didn't even know I was behind him because he's playing Battlefield 4. I stabbed him right in the neck. I mean, his buddy shot me, but it didn't matter. Like, I knew that motherfucker was there. And then, like, okay, cool. So what do you think about, you know, what we should do, when we should release? Oh, jeez. I got that motherfucker. I got him. It's just like, he's all fired up. And I can see, it's funny that you mentioned that because... right when you said I came off of playing Battlefield 4, I was like, I knew as soon as I asked Bobby, what do you think of this game? He's not killing enough. Yeah. He's not killing enough.
Well, let me say one thing about this game that will kind of describe it. You have to pick out an insurance plan for your spaceship. That is part of the game. You have to get quotes.
I'm out.
Insurance quotes.
I'm out.
For your spaceship. So,
well, this game focuses on realism. I know it's funny on a spaceship sort of game, but they really took their what they think their life
is going to be. The future is what I love, I think.
Yeah, and plays it out to a T. The game feels sparse and feels barren. It feels like you're not sure talking to people if they're friends or allies or foes. It feels like if you find something, it's like a treasure that you want to keep. Right. You know, that sort of thing.
It almost has a casual feel to it. This is what I really liked about it. I mean, first of all, it just graphically stunned me. I thought that was amazing. Yeah. Not only the ships and the space stations, but the space background, just the setting, was amazing.
Did you feel your spaceship represented you guys, or you want to get to the point where your spaceship represents you?
So you don't really customize it all that much.
You but the change one you buy, your ships
right.
so often that... You're not really tied to your ship.
It's not like Star Citizen where it's like, this is my ship and this is, you know, I feel ownership over it and I'm going to customize it with custom logos.
Isn't
I didn't get
like
that. Maybe that's later in the game. Again, we aren't very far in it. But like I said, it was almost casual in a sense. At least that was the way I was playing it. It gives you the opportunity, like World of Warcraft, where you can be a casual player. You can just be the guy who hangs out in Ironforge and maybe does some trading, and you level up your crafting really high, and it's not super stressful. This is a game you could kick back, relax, play all day. You know, maybe have the TV on in the background. It's not incredibly demanding.
Yeah, because one of the things is, you actually are going traveling from place to place. So if I went, so for example, I started out in this one place, and I had to get to the Sisters of Eve. It was 7 warp jumps to get there, and that equates in real time to almost 15 minutes of real time. And I could set my autopilot and basically go out to the kitchen and clean up the kitchen because. I mean, granted, I could get attacked on the way there, but it was mostly in high-tech zones, so I knew it was fairly safe.
Okay, so you make a wormhole jump, then your ship travels to the next wormhole entry.
So
and
each
in
of
that
the,
time, you could get attacked. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you can, while you're going from warp jump to warp jump, you can get attacked.
I'm just saying, why wouldn't they have fast travel? And that's probably why, right?
Well, they do. They have auto. They've got auto.
No, I mean instant. If you've already been
because
there.
That's part of the fun of it. Like you, like that's part of the scope, and you know, just like in World of Warcraft, you know, when
you're
flight
flying.
Points,
right?
Because travel time is kind of what sets the standard, sets the bar of what you can do is the travel time, and so that was it.
Cool. I'm glad that we did this on Eve, like as a listener, because I've always wanted to know what the fuck Eve's all about. But there's that learning curve and all that.
Yeah,
I'm glad maybe from this. People will know whether or not they want to jump in. It does look gorgeous, though.
One of the things that people always say is it's grief central. Like, there's a lot of griefers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I constantly... Because I watched a lot of new videos. Before I started playing, I watched some beginner guides and stuff like that. And basically what they say is CCP, the creators of it, they say if it's not specifically disallowed, it's allowed. If you can get away with it, yeah. If it's within the rules at all,
right.
If it's not outlawed, it's allowed. They won't give you your stuff back if somebody did something wrong. Yeah. But that's part of the world. That's part of what makes realistic. It feels harsh. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So there is a lot of people trying to figure out ways. So when you come in as a new player,
yeah.
who doesn't know any of this
hey,
stuff.
Look at this. Yeah, hey, you want to know these?
Exactly. So you just
I
have
can power
to,
level you, dude.
You yeah. just have to kind of watch yourself when you go in and think of everybody as trying to take advantage of you and just play that way until you get used to what is okay and what isn't okay.
And you're playing with mostly Icelanders, like ex-Vikings, dude. Like, it's like...
Yeah, you're playing with a lot of people all over the world, and yeah. but that adds to the appeal of it to me.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Knowing that I can do whatever I want as long as, and I won't get banned or I won't get kicked off.
Right.
You know, and it's really sets the standard of what is allowed. And I
we'll
think
see how your nice guy morals held up in the cold, dark space.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely going to play it some more, and I highly recommend it.
That's yeah. awesome. And to anyone curious about it, I would definitely recommend it. And big concern of ours was just it being really difficult and a high learning curve, and it was, but I'm telling you, this tutorial mm-hmm. was really good. It carries you through the whole thing. It explains everything. There's a lot to learn, but it explains it all. And we've talked in the past a little bit about tutorials in general, and you know, there's good ones and there's bad ones, but this is definitely a good one.
And cool. I'm hoping that you can play them at some point.
I'm still intimidated at this point right now after everything I heard, but yeah. Divinity Original Sin is a hardcore old-school RPG that's isometric.
But like Diablo?
Like Diablo, but it's like an RPG, you know, like stat-based, turn-based combat. Turn-based combat, and yeah, exactly. And what's really interesting about it is that it's from the ground up built to be a two-player co-op game. Even if you play as a single player, you're controlling two different characters who can go off in two separate directions and do their own thing independently. Like, it's really built to be a two-player game, but you can play it, like, you can skip in between how you want, but way better as two-player. And this is a 100-hour game, and it's coming super highly recommended from the PC gaming crew, the PC gamer crew. And that's a commitment right there, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Is this local co-op or online?
Not sure about the online co-op. I know...
It should be online. If you can go different directions, then screen.
Absolutely,
like
it wouldn't work. Yeah. And anyway, everything that I heard about it today, I don't want to get it too much because I don't know much about it. Here's another thing about our podcast and this PC Gamer podcast. They came out with one this week. Theirs comes out on Sunday and ours come out on Monday, and we cover a lot of the same things. And it's only because there's not a whole lot of news in the PC gaming realm every week. And this month in particular is a slow month for PC gamers. So that's why we get into a lot of what we're playing and stuff. So if you see some crossover, it's not because we're copying them. It's because we're all taking fish from the same pool. Yeah. So basically.
A lot of times we couldn't even if we wanted to because we record on Saturdays a lot of times.
Yeah, that's true.
So what else have we been playing this week?
Let's see.
Bobby, what you
other
got?
Than EVE Online.
And Battlefield?
I've been playing a ton of Battlefield 4, quite possibly one of my favorite games ever. I've been a huge fan. Oh, yeah.
I'm giggling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been a huge fan of Battlefield.
Well, when you can knife fools in the back, like, how is that not fun, right? Well,
so many funny things can happen in that game. Just the most random stuff. I was exchanging fire with some guy, and we were both kind of tucked behind walls, just shooting back and forth. And then I peek out from the wall to shoot this guy, and someone else just shot a rocket right at him, and it just blew him and the entire ledge he was standing on up, just in this giant explosion. It was just hilarious. Things like that happen all the time. And
so I've played Battlefield 3, but I haven't played Battlefield 4. What is better in Battlefield 4 than Battlefield 3?
Not a whole lot, actually. Battlefield 3 and 4 are very similar. I mean,
same genre, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've been playing all the Battlefield games ever since 1942. I've been playing 2142 and Battlefield Heroes. Like, I'm a big fan of this series, but 3 and 4 are very similar. 3, well, I guess 2 as well, really got into the destructible environment. You know, you can blow up walls. If people are hiding behind walls, you can blow that up. In 3, I think they started where you can actually demolish the entire building. Eventually, if a building takes enough damage, it just comes crumbling down. But Battlefield 4 is when they brought in something they called Levolution. This is all old news, really, but Levolution is just a funny word that they came up with to describe the level changing as the match goes on. So the map from the demo, Shanghai Tower, there's a giant tower in the middle. It's a capture point. You can either run to it, take the elevator all the way up, or you can get dropped off from a chopper. But if the tower takes enough damage, then it comes crumbling down and just turns into a wreckage.
Who's shooting at the tower, and why would you if it's a capture point?
Usually the people who do not have it captured will start attacking it more.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, it just takes
enough. Because it's a moot point once it's down. It's not a capture point anymore?
It's easier to capture. You don't have to. It's not as high up because it's a very tall.
Oh, I see.
Very tall thing. So sometimes people will get dug in there real well, and the other team will just think it's easier just to demolish the thing and bring it down. But you have other things like a radar dish that can come crashing down, a dam that you can break. My favorite one is Flood, where you start out the match and there's not a lot of water, but there is like water on the map, and as the game progresses, slowly the water level rises till it gets to the point where you either have to get into a boat or you have to hop from building to building. So the levels change as you're playing the match. Yeah, and
it's like a whole new level, really.
Yeah, exactly. It evolves. The level evolves. Levolution. That's.
Oh my god, that's fucking genius.
Yeah, and it's great, man.
I can imagine just the destructible marketing guys.
And somebody got a promotion over that one.
But I love the destructible environments, too. Like, everything. Just, you can break windows, you can knock down walls. Just love that part of it. And I love the large scale of it. You really feel like you're in a battlefield, and it's not as realistic as some other games, but it's got a lot more of that sitting and waiting and being tactical. And not only that, but you can play games that are without vehicles and in shorter or smaller maps that are just like Call of Duty, where it's just run and gun. And you can usually level up faster that way. So a lot of times I'll do that just to, you know, if I want to level up a gun or something, I'll do that. You can do pistols and knife only servers. There's a lot of flexibility.
What's interesting about what you just said is that BF3 can do Call of Duty, but Call of Duty can't do Battlefield 3.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, that's really interesting. Like,
but
if
I
you
think
have
the hardcore Call of Duty players say Battlefield 3 doesn't, or Battlefield doesn't
do
call,
justice. Yeah, right. But there is something similar, at least.
Yeah.
Where the other, it doesn't work the other way around.
True.
If somebody only has $50 for their multiplayer shooter that year, and they want it to be a military one, why not get the one that you can get the both worlds out of?
And the vehicles really sell it too. The vehicles are the most fun.
Insert another giggle right now. Oh, dude, I just took that guy out with the whirly bird. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I call the helicopter, the little tiny helicopter, the whirly bird, even though that's totally not what it's called.
Then I found out that was his own name for it. Yeah. He's got pet names for things. He loves that game. And I'm kind of jealous, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm not really into a game right now, unfortunately.
Well, I wish more people would play this game with me, but I don't think I've ever played any of these Battlefield games with anybody.
Dude, like, you can't get a 4-player game of Monaco going, let alone a 64 game. You know,
well, not even
game.
Just like someone I can team up with. You know what? Battlefield 2, a friend of mine, we used to play co-op, local co-op. Well, not local co-op, but I used to have like 2 or 3 computers in my room. So when my friend would come over, we would play Battlefield 2 a lot. And Battlefield 2, they let you name your squad. They don't let you do that anymore. Mm-hmm. We were always a flip mode squad.
There's the giggle.
I wonder why they don't let you name them anymore. How many cock squads were there?
I remember when I was playing Battlefield 2, like, things that happen, like where you were saying, like any, they provide the sandbox and anything can happen.
Write the story in that game.
I would tell people, non-gamers, about shit that would happen in Battlefield 2. Like, I remember I took a spot and then an APC showed up with like 3 or 4 characters in it. Every window was covered with a gun. They didn't see where I was. It was just one guy. It was special ops. I crawled under the motherfucker. They can't see that I'm there because there's so many of them. It doesn't tick the timer the other way. Mm. I put 8 pieces of C4 underneath them, crawl away, blow it up, the multiplier on that shit, it was like vehicle damage, squad damage, like the bing, 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 bing. I was like, that was the greatest thing I've ever done in any anywhere.
Awesome. And what I love about this, too, is I'm using NVIDIA Shadow Play. I've gotten real used to using that, and I use it for all my streaming now. But now I've just got it on the Shadow Play mode. So if something great happens, just Alt F10, and boom, I've got the last 20 minutes in a
video.
So
we're going to see a really good highlight video out of
Yeah, you might. There might be a highlight reel.
Some whirly birds.
Some whirly birds.
Some whirly birds, neck stabs, you know. Yeah. Yeah. The usual.
I'm sure there's already lots of videos because, again, you just have hilarious things. Like, I remember someone telling me about some experience they had there where they were flying a plane, they're dogfighting with someone, plane got shot down, they jump out, parachute, pull out a sniper rifle, snipe two people before they land. Like, just shit like that happens all the time.
Yeah, there's a video that I saw where a guy was being tailed by another jet plane. He ejected, shot the other guy with a rocket launcher, and got back in his plane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy shit.
And I love the maps on this game, too. That's one of my favorite things. Not just the levolution and the destructible environment, especially with the expansion packs that have come out. This is the first time that I've played the game since, like, it originally came out. And all the expansion packs, the China Rising, Naval Strike, one more, really good maps on there, too. They got... It just changes the game whenever you play a different kind of map. There's one called Locker, which is no vehicles. It's all indoors. And everybody starts funneling into these certain areas. There becomes these points of contention where there becomes a front where two sides meet and everybody kind of dances in and out of the line of fire trying to shoot other people before they get shot. And I always go medic because you can get so many points for healing.
Bodies are piling up.
Yeah, they're just piling up. You just you can revive people. It's hilarious because the medic will yell, well, the assault is the guy who can get the heal bag. And you throw these heal bags out, and he calls out med kits, and it cracks me up every time I do that because it sounds like one of those guys at like a baseball game or something. It's like, med kits here, get your med kits.
Peanuts.
So, question, are you excited for Hardline, or are you...
I am now. Well, I don't know, because Hardline is a different game. I'm really mad I missed the beta on that. I could not play it because of the driver issue that I had, and I had the beta and tried to play it. Would not work. I'm sure it's going to be just like Battlefield 4, just with objectives. So, yeah, I'm totally excited to check it out, but I don't know. I am stuck on Battlefield 4 right now.
Now, guys, if you're wondering, why is this guy stuck on a game that's, you know, semi-old now? It's because he just got the drivers for it. So it's a brand new game for him, right? Like,
yeah, well, it runs smoother, it looks better, and
it doesn't crash.
There was a problem. They made a really big point to update your drivers when Battlefield 4 came out, as they do with a lot of big releases, because they specifically release drivers for games these days. And what would happen with my old drivers is I would get into a game and I couldn't click on anything. It was like my mouse would just not... I'd click on the button, I could move the mouse, but it just wouldn't actually activate. And then I'd have to Alt-Tab in and out of the window, shut it down, restart it. Eventually it would work, but that's what I had to go through every time I played it. So yeah, now this is why I'm rediscovering it. And I installed that game and I installed Counter-Strike Go, and I'm like, I really want to get into a kind of a tactical first-person shooter. Ended up being Battlefield 4. So
it could have easily went the other way because Go is up there as one of the top games on Steam.
I've got more of a history with Battlefield, so that's why I went that direction. I'm a little more comfortable with it. CSGO would have been a little bit more learning on my part, but eventually I would like to get into that game.
I mean, we're 3 of 5. That might be a game that we want to get into.
I might have some news here next week regarding Counter-Strike Go, so we'll see. Cool. Stay tuned.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hints.
Hints. Hints.
All right. So what have you guys been... Well, I think that's all I've been playing. I played a little bit of Lifeless Planet the other night. Not too much to say on that. I was so damn tired when we were playing it.
What kind of game is this? I'm not sure I even know what game this is.
It looks like a puzzle platformer to me.
Yeah. It's a puzzle platformer, very atmospheric. You're an astronaut on a planet that I could not figure out what it was. It looks kind of like Mars, but it isn't. There's some civilization built up. You travel across it, just kind of like unraveling the story, and it's slowly revealed to you. Kind of a short game, maybe about 4 hours long.
Not a game you want to play when you're
sleepy. Is this the Russian cosmonaut?
Yeah.
Game? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But not a game you want to play when you're sleepy, right?
I was interested about this game. It wasn't good?
No, it is good. It is good. It's just I was really tired
Did
when
you
I was playing.
Did you finish it up?
No. Yeah, about halfway through it. So I'll finish that at some point and hopefully have more to say on it, but so far so good.
How much was this?
It's actually on the Humble Bundle right now. You can get it for $10. It's originally $20. You can get it for $10 and you get a whole bunch of other games. Darkness 2, I think that might even be bundled with
that
Bioshock.
That 2K bundle.
Yeah.
If you don't have those games, is probably the best bundle they've had ever.
That's a good one.
Is amazing. Is that still available?
Yeah, the Humble Bundle should be... They do a weekly one, and they do another one that'll last even longer.
Bioshock 1, 2, 3, Darkness 2. What was the other one that... Only with the $20 ones. It's not...
Was it XCOM? I don't know if it was
I want to say it was XCOM.
Oh, yeah, it was XCOM.
It's XCOM Enemy Unknown. And plus all their shitty games for $20. It's fucking crazy. Okay, so here we go. We're looking at it now. You get Bioshock...
Oh, the Spec Ops The Line,
one through three, mm-hmm. yeah. Spec Ops The Line, which is always highly reviewed. The Bureau, which is a kind of like 1.5 of XCOM Unknown. Darkness 2, which got good reviews. Mafia 2, I don't think has got good reviews. But for $20, it's one of the best
Bioshock
things.
Bioshock Infinite.
Yeah, you get all three Bioshocks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Spec Ops, I've heard a lot of good things about. Both the XCOM games. Yeah, great bundle.
You know what? Just for XCOM Unknown and for Infinite, it's worth the $20. And then you get those other things. So.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And the other one that includes Lifeless Planet, I think you have to spend $10 to be able to get that one. And you get the Strife closed beta with that one as well.
Strife, yeah.
Yeah, and a few other...
Stacking? That I had a lot of fun playing Stacking.
Yeah, that's a fun game. That one, I've only played about an hour of it, but that's a cool game.
Play more of that. That's a fun game. That's a Double Fine game, and you'll have a good time.
They look like a Russian stacking doll.
Yeah, you play a Russian stacking doll, the littlest stacking doll, so you can get into anybody else, but you can only go up the next size.
Okay.
So you got to go up the next size, but everybody you get in has a special ability.
Oh, I see.
Your special ability is getting in people, and then theirs is doing other things.
Yeah, it's my special ability.
Yeah. But it's a puzzle game. You got to figure out what's going on and everything like that.
Cool.
So
if you get in the wrong person or whatever. I see.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You should try it out.
And that bundle also comes with 30-day access to Curse Premium, which reminds me, Curse is doing something right now. If you use Curse Voice, which is like their voice program, with Smite, you get 200 free gems. I think they're going to be doing that for a while.
Hmm.
Oh, was that who they were?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, I got it now. Yeah, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, 200 free gems. Can't beat that.
That's a voice back right there.
Yes, it is.
All right, so what have you guys been playing?
The only other game that I've been playing this week... Well, I've been playing Hearthstone, but the other game that I played this week was Deadlight. I bought Deadlight during the Steam sale because it just looks really cool. I don't know if you guys have seen this. Mm-hmm. It's a 2D...
Oh, yeah, we both played and beat it.
Right? 2D scroll. Okay, yeah.
It's a game that you play and beat because it's so short.
Yeah, it's about 5 hours.
Yeah. Have you guys...
3 hours.
Have you guys talked about this on previous? Should I keep this short and sweet?
Did
yeah,
we?
Yeah. Yeah, we talked... I talked about it in depth.
The art is amazing. Gameplay is a little wonky because it's made for the it's made for the Xbox and was ported over to PC. So everything is on Xbox controller. I actually played this on keyboard and mouse, but I imagine it would be a cleaner play to play it on an Xbox controller. But I still it played through it fine. I didn't have issues with it. It was on the shorter side, but it was actually I was anticipating it being even shorter since it was like a PS. It was a online only kind of game, so I was expecting it to be shorter. But so the gameplay length I was happy with. Didn't have a whole lot of weapons and everything like that. I thought there would be more like different weapon types and stuff like that. But on the whole, I had a lot of fun with it.
What'd you pay for it?
I'm trying to remember what I paid for it. I want to say $4, but I'm not 100% sure.
You can only worth $4.
Yeah, you can find it on sale quite often for about $3.75. I think it might retail for $15, $10, somewhere around there.
Listen, like I'm not like gung-ho for my race and all. But when I do see something come out of, like, this is in a studio in Mexico, and their fucking name is Tequila Works. Like, if you were going to name a thing out of, right?
Yeah, no.
So, it's not like oh, Mexico makes the best games. But they made one, and it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, you know, it had its issues.
It was atmospheric. The
atmospheric,
art,
yes, and the art.
The art was amazing. Gameplay didn't hold it back at all.
Yeah.
I really like these like 2D side-scrollers that are in a 3D world. Yeah. It just feels really
nice. It's
kind
of like Tron. And it's got a silhouette kind of look to it. Very dark, very shadowy.
Very dark, yes.
Yeah.
And at first, I was like, this is what I said in my original review, was like, these goddamn Japs, they can't get simple fucking translations right. And then I realized at the end, it was like from Mexico City. I was like, these goddamn Mexicans, they can't get their translations right. Like,
I see a lot of development studios coming out of Mexico.
Yeah,
you know, I was surprised there was one development studio from Brazil, and I've liked both their games. They did Xenoclash 1 and 2, and they also did a game called Rock of Ages.
Well, didn't...
Wasn't Rock of Ages?
I don't know. Super weird games, all three of those.
Yeah, yeah. But I really liked them. That was Ace Team, I think. And both those games, Xenoclash 2 and Rock of Ages, are on the weekly giveaway.
Well,
been there for weeks.
I imagine.
They have one of the strongest economies right now, too. Growing economy.
Papa EO. I imagine that. I think that's got to be
Father
it.
And Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Which is a really good game, by the way. If you guys haven't played Papa EO, that's a really good game. You guys should check it out. The last thing on this game that I wanted to bring up was they have things that you can do to replay it. Okay. I didn't like it enough that I'm going to go back and play it.
I mean, that
like,
goes
it's
with
a playthrough,
most games,
and it was nice and all, but you know that it's a one-time playthrough for me.
Which drags me right into...
Injustice.
Which brings me right into Injustice.
Segway!
So when I originally bought this game, I was like, I heard the single player is great. I don't want to learn the mechanics to the point where I'm playing people online.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to learn enough so that I can beat the original game. And, you know, it took me kind of like, I shouldn't even say this. It took me about 4 hours to beat the single player game on this game. But a lot of it's like watching a CG movie. It's so fucking well done. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's no Toy Story 3 or something like that. But as far as a story going on as it within a fighting game, I know we already talked about this about 4 weeks ago, but I finished it up and it continues throughout. I was intrigued. I was like, what's going to happen here? Obviously, the good guys are going to hit, but who are the good guys? And the between the fights into the story was seamless. So back then I said, to get a great single player experience, it's probably worth my $750. Totally worth. Especially when I realized it went twice as long that I originally thought that it was going to go for that. So I thought that was really cool. For $750, or if you get it on sale, and you only have to be a fine... fan of fighting games, put it on easy, play through the thing. It's a cool little movie you get to watch for like 3-4 hours or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it's cool to see how they get the fights in, and there's always different like mechanics, 2v1 or like some other thing going on.
Yeah, and there's little mini games in there too. Oh, and then going back to Deadlight, there's extra credit stuff that you could do. I started to do it. I was like, this is all kind of gay. So,
yeah, like the little like...
In a bad way, not in a good way.
The little like handhelds. Did you play any of the handhelds that you can find?
No.
Yeah, they've got little handhelds that you can find. And then in the main menu, you can actually... This is in Deadlight. You can actually play the game that's on the handheld.
Hmm.
And like try to get your high score and stuff like that. It's got some cool stuff to it.
Cool.
Anything else we're playing?
So me and Pete, my old school friend, who I currently... I was talking to him the other day about maybe we should do an interview with him because he was a raid leader back in the day when that was like a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like Sony flew him out to San Diego from San Jose to talk about what they were going to do with the game. You know, that's pretty huge. Like we were the number one clan back then. It's pretty crazy. And we were talking about the end of the day. But anyway, so we got into Two Worlds 2. Graphically, the best $2 you can ever spend. Like, it is a gorgeous fucking game. You're like, you're playing it like, wow, this looks way better than a lot of the games that I've played. and then it kind of everything else sucks. Like, so they kind of went with, it's like a linear Skyrim where like there's 12 classes and you can go down any route you want, and but there's, you can only go down this one path. So you got to kind of choose what you go into. But then you can go into the multiplayer, which is suffering hugely from Dark Souls-itis. Like, nothing's explained. Me and my buddy, we went on the same server. We're in this little town. It's like, what do we do? I don't know. I literally got to the point where I'm just pushing all the buttons to see if it does something. F10 did something. F10 brought up a let's go adventure mode. So I made a like a party. He joined the party, and then we went into that. But there's no explanation for anything. I went online looking for guides, but everything's geared towards the Xbox. So I had a really, really hard time. But once we got in, it was pretty fun. Like I said, the graphics are great. The magic spells, the particle effects, it's like there's ice, fire, necro, whatever, dark magic. It's all the same particle effects with different colors, mm-hmm. you know, and they're doing damage or whatever. Maybe they go more in depth later. Can I recommend this game?
What kind of game is it? Is it third person hack and slash?
It is a third person RPG. I wouldn't call it a hack and slash. Yeah, maybe for him it was, because there were, the spell, what you can do with spells is very interesting. Every spell you get, you can customize completely how you want. So, you get the spell. Let's say it was poison. And then you can get the delivery method, which would be self, AoE, ranged, whatever you want, right? And then, so you're like, poison self, what's that do? And it cures yourself of all poisons. So that's one thing. Or you could do AoE, where it poisons everything around you. Or you could do ranged. But then ranged can be modified in three ways. It could be a spray, homing missile. Okay. And then on the other side, you can do... You can up the damage. You could, there is a lot to do with... And then Pete was playing a fighter class, and I was like, "What? I got this great shit I could do over here. What are you doing?" He's like, "I push left click." He's like, "I just chop shit up." I was like, "What? Is there nothing?" He's like, "That's about it. Like, there's a couple things I can do, but that's about it." So I think it's much more geared towards the magic side of it, mm-hmm. but you need those fighters in there. I had fun because I was playing with Pete, and it's been a while. I had more fun, as far as the game goes, with the single player. Single player, for $2, this shit knocks it out of the park. As far as the games goes, it's not. There's much better things out there, but I had fun.
So if you can get it for $2, get it.
Yeah, if you can get it for $2 and you're bored, yeah. No, just get it, and it'll be there when your wife leaves you or whatever you need to do.
But if it's $10, don't even worry about it.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay.
All right. What about you, Chad?
That was it.
That's all you... Oh, Deadlight and EVE Online?
Yeah,
oh,
and okay. Shovel Knight. So let's get into some news, huh?
All right. Something big's going on with Hearthstone, right?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So Naxxramas, if you're into Hearthstone, you've probably already read this. But if you haven't, they're doing their next mode, Naxxramas. They announced some things to it. There's going to be 5 different wings to it. The first wing is free. Each other wing is going to be $7 or 700 gold. And then you can get packs. You can get a Naxxramas pack for like $20 that has all of the, or $24 or whatever, that has all the wings that you can go. Each wing you can play through. The next wing will take a week to unlock. You can play through the wings, but then when you beat the wings, you can play through them again in heroic mode, which I thought was a cool idea, where it's going to be really hard to get through it, and you got to have a lot of skill. You got to have the right cards and everything like that. So it's kind of like a single-player raid mode kind of Hearthstone.
It's really confusing.
Yeah.
There's really never been anything like this.
Yeah.
If you can think of all of video gamedom, Magic's never released anything like this.
Yeah.
There's an established trading card game that's successful. That's Hearthstone. Now there is their first expansion pack's coming out, and it's single player in order to get cards for your decks that you can use in the multiplayer space. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what
nothing's
it sounds like.
Ever, yeah.
But we don't know for sure.
We don't know, because it sounds confusing. It's never been done before.
This is one of the things I'm most excited about, because I like to do single player PvE stuff. That's kind of my wheelhouse, and I love Hearthstone. I remember playing Naxxramas back when I was playing WoW. Like, all this stuff is right in my wheelhouse, so I'm ready. I'm excited.
Bobby, did you play Naxxramas, by the way, on the sideway? No?
No, never did.
I never got into that dungeon, too. It's the one that I regret because I...
Oh, we're talking about from World of Warcraft?
Yeah, World of Warcraft.
Which expansion pack was that?
It was original. It was in the original WoW. It was the last raid in the original WoW before they opened up Burning Crusade.
What?
But nobody played Naxxramas.
Nobody played it.
Because it was like right before the expansion.
Mm,
so then when Wrath of the Lich King came out, they redid it and made it one of the starting raids. Mm-hmm. So everybody got to play through it, but not... Mm. When the original one was a 40-man raid, so like the four horsemen in a 40-man raid is completely different than the four horsemen in a 20-man raid, that sort of thing. But
would you say it was one of their better works as far as like dungeons or like...
It's really good.
Yeah,
Naxxramas really is really good. And I'm excited to see their treatment of it in Hearthstone. I can't wait for this to come out. When I hear more, I'll let you guys know.
Yeah.
When is it coming out?
They have not announced a release date yet.
I believe they said July.
Did they?
Yeah, which is why that and goddamn Binding of Isaac, man. Like, I check like every day. Both of them. Like, I'm really excited about both of those.
Yeah, me too. Me too. You got some on No Man's Sky. You want to talk about that?
Sure. So, No Man's Sky, a 15-minute video came out with the lead designer. I forget his name, but as I'm watching this video and they're talking to the guy, he's got this kind of like twitchy, not good at social interaction, kind of like I'm a crazy guy thing, which is good. You want a crazy guy behind crazy fucking things, right? So, like... You know, his eyes dart around because he's thinking about shit, and he's one of those guys, you know?
Gotcha.
Like, he's got a lot of shit going on.
Misunderstood genius, right?
Yeah, for sure. Or maybe a couple... So, what's really interesting about this is they work at Hello Games, which is a small studio. They've done a couple of things before.
Did they do Joe Danger?
They did. Oh, yep. Okay. And that's what they're, like, known for, right? Mm-hmm. And there's, like, 15 to, like, 20 people in the studio. It's not a huge studio. And the studio got flooded and they had to move and all this shit. But four of them kind of like did a little mutiny, just locked themselves in a room for a year and came out with No Man's Sky on their own. Just four dudes, you know? And they came out with this thing. Okay, you've heard all this stuff. This was all in E3. What I just saw was after E3. And it's a little about more about what the gameplay is like. And so we already know that the exciting things about it is that it's procedurally generated. So... If you see something the first time, there's probably a good chance that you were the first person ever seeing that, including the developers. They didn't put that in the system. You're the first one. And that's why you're the first one to a planet, you get to name it, because the developers haven't even seen that planet. So, one of the most startling things I would say about this is the size of this game world. It is a two-scale galaxy. A two-scale galaxy. So, they said, potentially, if you had an Earth-sized planet, and a million players played, and you put them all on there, the chances of them seeing each other are minute. Like, you're not even going to see each other. But that's not how the game works. The game works as every person starts at their own planet. So, unfortunately, it's not going to be like me and Bobby can work together, kind of like you on Eve today.
Yeah.
You're going to start on your own planet, and you're going to work yourself to the point where you can go into space on your own. You have to do that. And maybe some people won't. Maybe some people will just... You can do whatever you want in this game. The one overlying... goal that most people might want to go into is getting to the center of the galaxy, which is light years away. So not only do you have to become a space-born race or whatever on your own, you need to get light. Yeah, this is something that takes months or maybe years to get to the center of the galaxy. And all he said that it would be worth the wait, whatever it is. So
sounds kind of like a species or
Spore.
And, Spore.
And right. I was going to say, as far as like a concept of game, I haven't been so excited for a game since something like this. Now, there's something like this already out, and that's Starbound.
Mm-hmm.
Starbound's very like, you start on a planet, you can do whatever you want on it, then you can eventually, but your spaceship's already there.
Mm-hmm.
On here, you need to build your first spaceship, get to space, you know, which is going to take who knows how long from, you know, you just chopping down trees. Sorry, Bobby. but
loves
guess
it.
What? All the indigenous life forms weren't pre-rendered. Like, all those indigenous, those are your planets. Like, potentially, nobody's ever seen any animals. There's going to be some people start on planets that are so hard that they're not going to get to a spaceship. Some people are going to get real easy planets, mm-hmm. you know? So there's that. Then there's NPCs. There's space traders. There's pirates. These are NPCs. You can raid them. You can trade with them. You can do all kinds of shit. The actual part where you're going to run into another player is super rare. But when it does happen, how special is that going to be?
Yeah.
2 months into your play, you see somebody else. What the fuck do you do?
Yeah.
How far along is he? Do I run? I should probably run. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, in theory, just like I was on a sport, I mean, this sounds like something new, something amazing. A two-scale galaxy?
Yeah.
If every player started on the same planet, that's amazing. So,
but in the same vein as Spore, like, we should temper our expectations a little bit. Like, it's probably not going to...
You know me, man.
It's probably not going to match what our expectations are going to be.
Sure.
But that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I remain skeptical.
Wow.
Wow. We didn't expect that.
This is... If I had to use my golden shutdown, it would be for this game. I would pull it out just for this game. I think... I don't even have any reason behind this. I just think that the hype train has just got carried away with this game more than anything else I've seen. And I don't know why. I have a hard time...
The hype train on the Oculus is pretty high, too.
Yeah, but I like the Oculus.
Oh, he wants to borrow it, by the way.
Yeah, you do it. All right.
Yeah, no, I like the Oculus, and I think the Oculus is going to be good for certain games. It's not going to be a one-stop, you know, it's not going to be great for everything, but I think the games that it is good for, it's going to make them amazing. But this one, I don't know. I need to look at some more information, and I don't know if that information is even out there yet. I got to check out this video. I haven't even watched it yet.
Yeah, I want to check it out, too.
Cool. Let's call it a day.
We got some Battleborn stuff.
A lot more, but we're running a little long. And the last thing, those are all things we can bring up next week. The last thing I want to get into as far as news goes, there's two more things. Evo's this weekend, so if you're listening on Monday, it doesn't matter because you don't want to watch it live. It's too much. Evo is the fighting game championships of the world. Everybody said, you know, this is the premier fighting championships. So, Street Fighter all weekend. I'm not going to watch it live.
Injustice is there.
Mortal Kombat X, they said that they're going to be there. So, kind of like a surprise tournament. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
For a game that's not even out, which is great. I mean, Dive Kick was there last year. You
know? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
So, I would say even if you're not a fan... once the tournament's over, just watch, somebody puts together something called like the most hyper parts of Evo. Just put that together. I mean, you can hear the crowd to hear a crowd behind something that's going on digitally on a screen that's going along with the emotions you're feeling. Like, oh my God, this is super close. Oh my God, there's a fucking comeback. And then you hear the, it's awesome. All those 1,000 people are feeling what you feel. You know, I'm sure it's better than when you're there. I wouldn't say watch it live because you're going to watch a lot of boring matches. There's a lot of, you know, lay and play and stuff. But
Just catch the highlights.
Just catch the highlights. I mean, at least.
Fighting games are fun to watch, too, because it's two people going head-to-head. It's like a boxing match. Yep. So it is entertaining.
And there's no, oh, I was lagging, because that shit's right there, you know?
Yeah, it's all local.
Yep, absolutely. And the last thing in news is... Cliffy B, he formed his own studio now. It's called Boss Key. And he says he's announcing all... It's funny because all these plans in development is like, we're going to have this, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this. And Cliffy B is a really smart guy. He's really big in the PC and just gaming world in general. Yeah, he's the guy behind Unreal Tournament. He's the guy behind Gears of War, which were huge, two gigantic IPs.
Bulletstorm.
Was he?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which is a very underrated game.
Yeah. So he's a really smart guy.
And Fable. Didn't he do Fable? Didn't he work on Fable?
Sure. I don't think so.
I know the ones that he was directly behind were the ones that I just said. But anyway, So he's putting together his own studio, and this is all he said about what he's going to do. He has a sci-fi arena free-to-play shooter. That's it. So arena kind of says to me, Unreal Tournament, kind of like, you know, free-to-play means you can, they're going to sell things to sparkly bracelets, which is, if it's only cosmetic, that's the way to go. He's also said that this is based on what we've cut our teeth on as players. So this is old school, like fucking Twitch rocket launching shit. Who knows if it's going to work, but he knows the gamosphere. If somebody's going to do something right, it's probably going to be him. I read a lot of his tweets and stuff, so I'm kind of excited about that. That's huge in the gaming world. If you just look up one thing, anywhere you look, they're talking about this game already. Project Blue Streak, I believe.
Cool. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'm excited to see what he did or what he's going to do with now that he's branched away when he left that company. That was quite a while ago.
Yep. That was who made Gears of World War?
Gearbox Studio was that? No, that's Borderlands.
Epic? Yeah. Epic. Yeah.
Epic.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, he left Epic. Yeah. I think I want to say like 4 years ago, but I'm not sure. And he said he wanted to leave to go make his own studio, do his own thing, and then he kind of laid low for a bit, but he's back on the scene, and I'm happy to see that. Cool. Well, is that about
let's wrap it?
It
up.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, check out DL Gaming, our Steam group. Check out those documentaries if you're looking for something to watch. There's a good one that I'm going to be watching on MMOs. I haven't seen it before. I'm excited to check that out. If you want to, are you guys on Origin?
Not actively, no.
Not okay. Actively.
Well, I am active on Origin with all those Battlefield 4 I've been playing. So, Robert Digital, no spaces, that's the name if you want to friend me on there. And definitely follow us on Twitter. DL Gaming DOTnet is our Twitter feed. If you do one thing, that's the thing to do. Just follow us on Twitter.
And we're kind of thinking of, we're not going to announce it now, but if we do it next, we might do it, we might announce it next week, where Chad and I will take one quarter shot for every additional follower that we get.
I think it should be a full shot.
Oh, dude, could you imagine? Like, if every one of our... We would be dead. We'd die. Yeah. So, a quarter worth shot it. For every new follower. Worth Don't do it. It this week. But the week after next, we'll announce it if we actually... Should we just announce it?
Yeah, sure.
You want to do it?
Sure.
All right, we're going to fucking do it. For every follower that we get... After this comes out, so after Monday, to the next Monday, we would do one quarter shot. So tell your friends, we'll get fucked up on the podcast. We'll call it Drunk Cast. We're going to get deep. Crazy thing is, Bobby doesn't drink. So he's going to, there's going to be a lot of eye rolling. I mean, a lot of slapping. So that's going to happen. Thanks for listening. I really got to pee. So
all right.
Let's call it.
Later.
Titties.